We're going to go ahead and get started. I want to welcome everyone to the meeting tonight. I'll ask that you please, everyone take your seats and please silence your cell phones if you would, electronic devices, so we can begin. And John, the meeting is recorded now, right? So good evening, everybody. I'm going to call this meeting, public hearing, to order. My name is Tim Baumgartner, and I'm a member of the Environmental Management Commission. I'm going to serve as the hearing officer tonight for this this public hearing. Sorry, I got a script. I'm trying to get through. I want to take this opportunity to notify anyone that the hearing, that this hearing and all comments are being recorded as official record. At this time, I'd like to introduce members of the Department of Environmental Quality. Karen Higgins with Water Quality Planning Section Chief. Rich Gannon, Non-Point Source Planning Chief. Laura Deemer, Basin Wide Planning Branch. And John Heisman, Non-Point Source Planning Branch. This hearing is being held under the authority of the North Carolina General Statutes 143 and 150B. It's in accordance with these general statutes. A public notice of this hearing was published in the January 2nd, 2025 edition of the North Carolina Register. Notice was posted on the DEQ website and sent to various local and state federal agencies, associations, and other interested parties in accordance with state and federal regulations. The notice included text of the proposed rule and revisions and regulatory impact analysis. There is a QR code in the back to view this notice, including the proposed rule language and the regulatory impact analysis at the registration table. The purpose of the meeting today is to obtain public comments on the proposed rule changes for Title 15A, North Carolina Administrative Code, Chapter 02B, Section 0733. DWR is proposing to revise the rule language and codify the requirements for existing wastewater facilities in the Tarpaulin River Basin that are currently addressed through a group discharge permit and signed agreement with DWR and the EMC. I'm now going to ask John Heisman, he's an environmental program manager with Division of Water Resources, Non-Point Source Planning Branch, to give a presentation on the proposed rule.
Oh, just fine. You know what? I'll just pop that off there. Good evening, everyone. My name is John Heisman. I'm with the Non-Point Source Planning Branch at the Division of Water Resources. And I just have a brief presentation to go through the proposed revisions that we have that are out for public comment for the proposed amendments to the TARPAM Wastewater Discharge Requirements Rule at 0733. So I'd always like to start out with just a little bit of history of the management strategy in the TARPAM, because the TARPAM nutrient management strategy has a longer history than some of our other management strategies in the state. We've had a strategy in one form or the other addressing the nutrient inputs to the TARPAM estuary since as early as the 1990s, starting out with a strategy agreement that was put in place per an estuary model TMDL to address the chlorophyll A impairment in the estuary that was a result of excessive nutrient inputs of nitrogen and phosphorus to the estuary. This agreement was based off of a 30% load reduction and no increase in phosphorus load relative to the 1991 baseline in the TARPAM, and resulted in a wastewater compliance association with group caps based on those that TMDL noted in their permits. So it started out with that agreement, the group caps for the wastewater facilities starting in the 1990s. This was followed by a rule that was adopted in 1997 that addressed all of the other point sources that were not part of the association. So this non-association rule addressed all of the new and expanding facilities and basically set technology limits for them and required that they offset their new and expanding loads by either obtaining allocation or purchasing offsets through a BMP payment option. following these point source requirements, in the early 2000s and 2001, the EMC, the Environmental Management Commission, adopted non-point source rules that called for reductions in nutrient inputs in the TARPAM from row crop agriculture, new development stormwater, and put in place riparian buffer protection rules. So we now have a comprehensive nutrient management strategy approach in the TARPAM that addresses both point and non-point source. I want to talk a little bit about that TARPAM point source agreement, because that is what the main crux of the talk is today, about codifying those requirements. That original agreement was a signed accord between the association, the Environmental Management Commission, at the time the Department of Environmental Management, Division of Soil and Water Conservation, and the original agreement was signed on by environmental groups as well. That association that I'm referring to is the TARPAM Basin Association, the TPBA, which is made up of 15 municipal wastewater dischargers. Under the agreement, it established a collective annual end-of-pipe nitrogen and phosphorus caps for the association, and the way it worked, that as long as the group remained under the cap, that group cap compliance equated to individual compliance. So as long as the group was under the cap, each of the individuals were under their individual compliance requirements. Should the association exceed their caps, through the agreement, there was a mechanism to fund ag cost share BMPs to offset any exceedance. This agreement that went into place in 1990 was subsequently updated and revised in 1995, 2005, and 2015. And one point I always like to point out, that although there is the mechanism for offsetting any exceedances to the cap, that has not needed to take place because the association and its members have consistently remained under their nutrient caps and are currently at 70% of their nitrogen caps and 68% of their phosphorus caps. This is a map of the TARPAM Basin showing the location of the 15 TARPAM Basin Association members. And as you can see, the membership stretches from all the way up in the upper basin down to the lower basin by the estuary. These are all municipal wastewater treatment plants. Collectively, they have a total permitted flow of a little bit over 62 million gallons per day. This represents 98.7% of the permitted flow in the basin. And collectively, the association is probably just about half of that full permitted flow. Some of the larger dischargers are like Rocky Mountain, Greenville, but we have smaller facilities with smaller dischargers like Bunn, Enfield, Tarboro, and Spring Hope. So it's a vast, you know, a wide variety of different point sources working together to stay under their caps. But again, this association represents 98.7% of the permanent flow in the basin. So given what I've shared so far about the association and the agreement and things are working, you might ask yourself, why are we moving the requirements from that agreement into the rule? And one of the big drivers here is that the requirements that we are currently under through the Administrative Procedures Act, and that act is statutes that basically dictate how we develop rules and guidance, has a definition of a rule, you know, basically calling for anything, any type of regulation that the division has out there that can be construed as a rule shouldn't exist in a guidance or policy document. It should, in fact, be placed within a rule that goes through the public comment and public scrutiny. So a lot of these requirements that we have in the agreement would meet the definition of a rule, and it's more appropriate for those requirements to be placed within the rule. By placing those requirements in the rule and not having them in this signed agreement, it establishes this more enforceable foundation for the requirements that we have in place in the permit. It helps us avoid potential challenges to the requirements down the road. And throughout the process, it gives us this opportunity to modernize and improve the language and clarity of the requirements. So the current TARPAM wastewater rule that's been in place since 1997 was readopted through our rules readoption process for both the NUSE and the TARPAM when we readopted all of the rules back in 2020. The current rule addresses new and expanding facilities, like I mentioned before, requiring these new and expanding facilities to obtain existing allocation or purchase offsets to offset those new and increased loads. It also, when it was updated, we made sure to provide that clear regulatory pathway for allocation and trading of nutrient offsets to continue. And it did broaden the coverage during that readoption to cover new and expanding Tarpan Basin Association members effective for the TPBA when the agreement would expire in May of 2025. This current rule also was updated for the treatment standards for these new and expanding dischargers, changing the municipal and industrial treatment standards down to 3.5 milligrams per liter for nitrogen and 0.5 milligrams per liter for phosphorus, and setting treatment standards of best available technology for industrial facilities. Under the current rule, the Tarpan Basin Association members can expand within their current nutrient allocations. The current rule was also updated and for how that offset process works, getting away from this list of fixed BMP formula using the AgCoShare program, and instead tying into the nutrient offset rule, the 0703 rule, that has costs set by providers like the Division of Mitigation Services or private nutrient banks. The current rule, as it stands now, does not currently address the Tarpan Basin Association group compliance requirements that I discussed earlier. So, in order to address both the new and expanding dischargers and the current dischargers under the Tarpan Basin Association agreement, these are the proposed revisions that we're proposing for the Tarpan Wastewater Rule to pull those requirements into the rule and codify them. One of the things that we need to do is add several definitions to the rule that cover aspects of the agreement, like what the association is, what an active allocation is, a limit, and a reserve allocation. We also are proposing to put within the rule the group cap that includes the total nitrogen and phosphorus discharge allocation for the association. These numbers currently reside within the agreement, and we're proposing to put these group cap numbers in the rule. That's that 891,271 pounds of nitrogen, 161,070 pounds of phosphorus. That's the group cap that would be placed in the rule. The rule would also include the individual nitrogen and phosphorus allocations of the association members that make up that group cap. We also reflect in the proposed revisions that any future changes to those individual allocations would be reflected in their updated permits. Also, with the revisions, cap exceedances would be offset with credits purchased in accordance, again, with that nutrient offset rule. Again, that gets us away from the ag cost share BMP payment program and instead gets us into the nutrient offset structure of using the Division of Mitigation Services and different private banks. And this is an important change because it really helps us with, under the current agreement, there is a nitrogen offset rate, but not a phosphorus offset rate. And under the current agreement, it doesn't provide a clear pathway for offsetting phosphorus, but by tying it into the 0703 rule and allowing the use of banks and mitigation services that do have offset rates for both nitrogen and phosphorus established, it provides a clear regulatory pathway for offsetting those nutrients. Some additional things that we're proposing to this rules that provide some additional flexibility are, and also recognizing some things that are in the agreement that are currently there that need to be codified, is including the option to use existing offset credits that were earned per the agreement. Under the current agreement, the Tarpan Basin Association funded various activities over the several decades within the watershed that under the agreement they earned reduction credit that equated to 59,000 pounds of nitrogen. The rules would include that 59,000 pounds as available for a one-time use as an offset to honor that agreement. We also are proposing adding a new option to use reserve allocation for new and expanding dischargers. This available reserve allocation would also be about 59,000 pounds of nitrogen and 4,000 pounds of phosphorus. This reserve allocation comes from the lone industrial point source that was a member of the association back in the early 2000s, but stopped discharging after 2004. So their allocation was set aside in a reserve, and this makes it available for offsetting new and expanding dischargers. If an association or non-association discharger requests to use that reserve allocation to expand, those allocations would be set using equivalent concentrations of 3.5 milligrams per liter and 0.5 milligrams per liter of phosphorus, or best available technology for industry. So they have the option of requesting using that reserve allocation, but we do have requirements of the concentration limits that they have to meet in order to use that reserve allocation. We also added some exemptions for minimum flow thresholds for expansions, recognizing that small facilities that are below 0.1 MGD of permanent flow are not assigned nutrient allocations. There's some administrative aspects of the update to the rule to kind of clarify the procedural steps of how things work. Also recognizing transfers of allocation through adding some language, and this refers to allocation that is transferred from one facility when a larger facility accepts the waste flow from a smaller facility or a different facility. Basically, that allocation from the facility they're receiving is transferred to that receiving facility. We also lay out the groundwork recognizing the group compliance option of the agreement into the rule. And this simply kind of maintains that framework of the agreement where the group compliance option recognizes that the association can meet its allocations for nitrogen and phosphorus collectively. Individual members are in compliance as long as the association remains under its caps. If the association is to exceed its caps, the rule requires that they have to obtain or use existing offsets. And should a member leave the association, they would have to meet the requirements of their individual NPDES permits if they either leave the association or for whatever unlikely reason the association disbands in the future. At the core of this, I just want to reiterate that these proposed revisions to this rule are about incorporating that current framework, maintaining the framework for the group compliance option and the current implementation approach that's been under implementation over the past three decades, while adding some additional flexibility of meeting the requirements. As part of a rules readoption process, we're also required to do a regulatory impact analysis to look at costs and benefits. And as I discussed earlier, the findings of this regulatory impact analysis highlight the necessity for the rule revisions and how this rule revision codifies these existing requirements, meeting the APA definition of a rule, provides this enforceable foundation for the permit requirements, modernizes the language, improves the clarity, and adds a compliance option, additional compliance options to the rule. Under our regulatory impact analysis, we've determined that there's no new cost to the regulated community or state and local governments since we're codifying these existing requirements that are already in place. And there's no substantial impact as defined by General Statute 150B 21.4. So I wanted to wrap things up by just talking about kind of where we are in the process and what the next steps are. So the proposed rule revisions and the fiscal analysis, the regulatory impact analysis, were published to the North Carolina Register in January, and this is, I apologize, 2025, not 2005. Sorry for that oversight there. So the rules were published in 2025 in the North Carolina Register. The public comment period, the 60-day public comment period, goes from January 2nd of this year through March 3rd is the public comment period. Obviously, we're holding the public hearing today. March through April, once we receive these comments, DWR will work with the hearing officer assigned by the Environmental Management Commission to deliberate those comments and determine if any changes need to be made and develop a hearing officer's report. And my plan is to bring that hearing officer report and the final rule recommendations to the EMC in May of 2025 for adoption. That would result in going to the Rules Review Commission for approval with that final rule in June, resulting in a July 1st rule effective date. So that kind of lays out where we are now and the path forward for the rule's effective date if everything goes smoothly. I wanted to again reiterate that the public comment period is now open. Look forward to hearing any comments that you have this evening. You can also submit written comments to me. My email address and mailing address are here. This QR code can also be found at the registration table where you can download the public notice announcement that includes the fiscal regulatory impact analysis and the proposed rule revisions and instructions on how you can submit public comments to me. At this point, I wanted to conclude and pass things back over to the hearing officer.
All right, now for the reason we're here, to hear from you, the public, and hear your comments. We are first going to take comments from registered speakers. I have one, Katie Zimmerman. And I'm going to ask that you keep your comments to 3 minutes, if you would, and please feel free to share your public comment.
Okay. Can I do it from here?
Yes, please. Okay.
Hi everyone, my name is Katie Zimmerman. If I can figure out where I put my notes. I offer this comment tonight in my role as your Pimlico Tar Riverkeeper with the nonprofit Sound Rivers, also a resident of downtown Washington along the Pimlico River. Sound Rivers supports the codification of the Tar Pan Basin Association's agreement into rule, but would like to take this opportunity to state our concerns about the outdated data used to calculate TMDLs and the fact that the river is still not out of impairment for nutrients. The Tar Pan Lagoon Nutrient Management Strategy is based on a TMDL for total nitrogen relative to a baseline calculated from 1991 to 1995. This means that nitrogen allocations in this permit are based on data from over 30 years ago and do not properly reflect changes to the watershed in the ensuing years. Loading calculations should be based on more current data. This is especially important as regions throughout the basin continue to grow in population and as climate conditions continue to impact nutrient loading. Increased and more frequent precipitation events will lead to greater nutrient pollution challenges, and higher flow periods tend to coincide with higher nutrient loads. Even using these updated TMDLs, the goal set in 1996 to reduce nutrients by 30% is not being met. The Pamlico estuary is still impaired for chlorophyll A, and segments of the estuary have consistently been listed on the state's 303B list. Since 2021, there have been 142 fish kills and 232 algal blooms in the Tar Pamlico River, according to DEQ's online dashboard, many of these reported to Sound Rivers through hotline calls. We also note the nutrient loading contribution of sanitary sewer overflows, or SSOs, which continue to challenge wastewater treatment plants throughout the watershed. We agree that the Tar Pamlico Basin Association's agreement should be codified into rule, yet the rising nutrient loads, continued chlorophyll A impairment, increased challenges from a changing climate, and ongoing fish kills and harmful algal blooms all indicate that current regulations are not protecting watershed health. To address these threats to watershed health moving forward, we suggest that current data be taken into account to design new TMDLs and update nutrient loading limits.
Thank you very much for your comments. And Ms. Zimmerman, please feel free to provide written comments as well if you'd like. Thank you very much. That was the only registered speaker we had. Is anybody else that didn't register like to speak? Have public comment? Going once, going twice. John, if you can. No? All good. Okay. I saw debate. I was just make sure. Okay. All right. Since there's not anyone that wants to comment at this time, I'd like to thank everyone for your interest in being here, coming out this afternoon, or tonight, excuse me, and taking out of your time to provide support or provide comment to this rule. If you'd like to submit written comments, please do so. The record will remain open until March the 3rd at 11:59 p.m. Anyone can submit their comments to Mr. John Heisman, sitting here in his nice purple tie, and at the address provided in the public notice announcement will be included in the record. Based on information that we've received tonight and the hearing officer and the public comment that was provided during this period, in accordance with state and federal regulations, I will make a recommendation to the Environmental Management Commission for their consideration in making the final decision on this proposed rural reclassification. Thank you so much for your attendance tonight. We appreciate it very much. And I'm going to call this hearing adjourned.